Radio Entrepreneurs. Again, my name is Jeffrey Davis. This is the Money Matters Radio Network Studios. Just to remind our listeners, we're heard on three stations, WBNW 1120, WPLM 1390, and WESO 970. Please keep joining our Facebook page, Radio Entrepreneurs. People are joining all the time, really enjoying all the conversations, and our network is quite large. Today in the studio, again, we have Greg Stoller, our international business reporter. I'm sorry you weren't on my list today. That's what threw me off a little bit. But Greg, welcome back to the studios.
Thank you.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
Greg, talking about a really big purchase.
Yes. We're here this afternoon talking about the Dell buyout, which has gotten a significant amount of press in the media in the past couple of weeks. You know, traditionally, when you think of buyouts, you think of the Colbert, Kravis, Roberts, Barbarians at the Gate, and stuff of that ilk that happened in, you know, the LBO world of the 80s and the 90s.
Well, that's sensationalist. It makes it easier.
Of course, it's sensationalist, and it sells books, and it sells, right, you know, newspapers. But this one is truly, at least ostensibly, Dell's desire to be more in control of its corporate strategy. And instead of feeling like they have to kowtow to the likes of Wall Street, depending on what strategy they're going through, and by account their shareholders, they're saying that if they do a buyout, that they will have more control. Well, not surprisingly, that has set off a whole flurry of activity of Dell's competitors basically using this as an opportunity to throw darts at them, saying, well, this just further confirms that Dell is basically done and that our strategies, Lenovo, if you will, out of China, is better and has been more proven, etc. Some of the shareholders should be happy because they're going to be getting a fairly good premium over the stock, etc. But the first lawsuit was recently filed that the shareholders don't think that they are getting a very good deal. And finally, the media is speculating that there have been many a company that have done buybacks and then have fixed all of the problems, have subsequently gone public again, and have been able to fleece the pockets of their founders and the private equity firms that much more.
Interesting.
Yes.
A lot of scenarios here. This is like Peyton Place. This can go in a lot of directions.
Peyton Place in the Peyton Place boardroom.
But historically, Dell has been a model to the industry because it has the best cash management cycle of all computer companies.
Correct. So Dell, we were talking about this off air. Dell has been a great story.
Right.
And it's really been a success story in terms of customized PCs and stuff of that ilk. The problem is that if you think today of the top computer companies, I'm not necessarily sure that Dell would any longer be in the top five.
That's correct.
And and the question
especially is... Especially with the new advances over the last 6 months.
Right. One of the articles basically said that everybody wants to be an Apple wannabe. And, you know, I think that Michael Dell would probably throw himself into that ring. So what do you do? Do you... You certainly don't sell the company because who's going to buy them?
Right.
You could. You certainly... Bankruptcy is an option because the company is still solvent and, you know, and share price is in the teens.
Right.
But what do you do in terms of next steps?
And Wall Street is more concerned with short-term return on investment, which I understand. So if you are going to be looking at a long-term strategy for survival, it may be better for making decisions to take it private again.
Correct. But of course, it's not that simple because you're talking about delisting, you're talking about having your shareholders vote, and you're talking about the real sort of ulterior motives, if you will, of the private equity firm.
Oh, and you know, this is a democracy. You're not going to make everybody happy.
Right.
Let's say you make 65% happy and 35% are pretty upset. You're still potentially looking at a potential liability issue, even if it's not real.
But I guess the tack that I'm taking is, what would a private equity firm's incentive be to park $24 billion in a single deal? I mean, the purists of the world, the experts of the world are saying, how is the company going to be able to survive if it's mired in that much debt? And that, to me, makes it a very interesting story, is in an effort to position itself better for the medium term, we're not even at long term, is it going to kill the goose that's laying the golden eggs by saddling the company with that much debt?
Right.
That's why I think it's an interesting story.
And how it's structured.
Right.
How it's structured, how the money's being used, what's the repayment.
Right.
And what's really the long-term goal.
And I think what's happening is that Michael Dell is actually going to be putting in his own amount of money. And this is just a news story that broke, a couple days ago, by the time our segment gets broadcast, is that he is ponying up $750 million of his own money in order to put this in there as well. So there's some very interesting issues at work in terms of corporate strategy, dividends, buybacks. You know, traditionally, they say that a company that does a dividend payout is signaling to Wall Street that it doesn't believe in the future of its own company anymore, and that's why it's doing a share buyback or increasing its dividend. This is the exact opposite of that case, is that basically the company is privatizing in order to make it that much better for the long term.
This is Radio Entrepreneurs. We've been talking with Greg Stoller, our international business reporter, about Dell Computer and the buyback of the stock. Greg. Michael was good. Dell.
I will take Michael Dell. That's no problem. Thank you for the compliment.
So, Greg, let's say that you are in the position of making the decision. What would you do in this situation?
I think I would answer that, and I gave some thought to that likely question that you would ask me in preparation for the interview. I think I would actually put myself into the shoes of a Lenovo. So we visited Lenovo as part of the work that I do with Boston College. It's a fascinating company. And what's made it particularly more fascinating.
And they're making the IBM laptops, Lenovo. For those who don't connect the dots.
That's exactly what I was going to say, is that IBM several years ago wanted to sell its PC division. So they ended up selling the PC division to Lenovo. Lenovo ended up basically setting up a dual corporate headquarters structure in upstate New York. And to this day, I've spoken about this case several times over the years in my global strategy class. Is it really going to work over time? For the first few years that I taught the case, the answer was, I'm not so sure this is going to fly, because you can't really be bicultural and you can't really be bilingual, if you will, by having two separate headquarters offices. You know, which is it going to be? You're going to be in China, you're going to be in the United States. Over the past couple of years, the
like married couples
right,
that, live in
exactly
different,
right.
that live in separate
right.
residences.
Right. In the past couple of years, the Lenovo price has been absolutely skyrocketing, but the ability for them to continue to use the IBM ThinkPad name is going to be up for renegotiations in terms of contract. Now you overlay that little company that happens to be a fruit that has been making money hand over fist in terms of everything and everything Mac, and the company is just doing great. So the entire world has changed in terms of the PC.
And the
division.
PC market is now crashing into the fruit market.
Right.
and is right now, you know, in the opening stages of its biggest sort of like technological crash into it that it's ever had. And it's going to change things in the next 6 months because the products look eerily similar now.
And further add sort of complexity to the Dell issue we were talking about is that Microsoft is obviously interested in seeing this deal succeed because so much of their software is going to be on Dell computers.
And Steve Jobs, our modern-day Edison of big breakthroughs or leapfrogging, is not there anymore. So we don't know if Apple still has the ability to continue to leapfrog over others.
Right. And I've often thought about that. I mean, that's just great stuff that you can talk about, certainly in professional circles, but also in academic circles, is you'd think that a company the size of Apple, one guy or one girl, shouldn't be able to influence an entire company as much as he did. And we all know the answer is, I mean, obviously, nobody knows what's going to happen moving forward in terms of what Mr. Cook's going to be able to do or what Mr. Schiller's going to be able to do at Apple. But it's pretty sobering to think that Steve Jobs had that much vision in order to control the entire company.
You know, but it's not unusual, and it's been happening since the beginning of time. Leaders of countries, leaders of armies, leaders of religious movements, and leaders of organizations. Henry Ford. Ford was not the same for almost 60, 70 years after he passed away.
And I would agree with that, except I would slightly push back and say that back in those days, it was a much different industry structure. There weren't, you know, as many car companies as there were back then as there are now. I think what makes it interesting in the personal computer space is that there's so many competitors. It's such a vibrant industry that, you know, two or three years later, the entire industry, to your point, Jeffrey, can change. But yet he was still dominating as a visionary. It's fascinating.
One leapfrog can change the industry.
Right.
Everybody was using BlackBerry 10 years ago. Apple came out with its product, leapfrogged it, and who's using BlackBerry now?
Right.
I mean, people are still using it. there's a legacy target market, but it doesn't have the market share it once had.
Absolutely. We go back to last week's segment when we, you know, talked about the new BlackBerry, and of course they had fun with the Super Bowl, sort of indicating what, you know, their products are going to be able to do or what they can't do. But you're right, that might be the thing that puts BlackBerry back on the map. On the other hand, they could very much be an also-ran. Yeah.
Well, I think what people don't realize about business, I think employees don't realize it, owners don't always realize it, they realize it more, families sure don't, and other people, is that businesses aren't homes. They're not something you own permanently that you can pass on to your children, and that they're going to logically increase in value over time if you just make small investments. When business and families that inherit homes look at them as caretakers and they take care of them. Usually families that take over businesses and assets think like caretakers as well. They're not entrepreneurs.
And my father, may he rest in peace, one of his greatest pieces of advice to me is that any business that is standing still is essentially moving backwards.
Exactly. So, you know, businesses come and go. And that's just the life cycle of business. We've all seen that in Massachusetts, Prime, Data General, Digital Equipment. There's no guarantee that Dell's going to stay around. It had an incredible run. It can be good for investors, but that's the buyer beware issue. You got to know when to get in, and you got to know when to get out.
But when you talk about family businesses, which is what you specialize in, I mean, can you ever imagine Mage, your company, going away? It's just not something you could think of Dell going away because, you know, as you said, companies come and go. But at a certain level, you know, you talked about, you know, being a caretaker of a house. When it becomes personal, when it's a company you've built up or when it's a company that you personally run, the thought of doing something else or having that business change is just considered to be almost heresy.
Yeah, but I've evolved over time because there was a time when I tried to build what I would call then a legacy company that would have that would live beyond the life of the founders, the original founders of Mage. And today, that's not the way I think of Mage. I think of Mage as you know, this is a practice that my partner and I do with our staff members. And when we're finished doing it, we're finished doing it. I have no ambitions to see anything else.
And I think the fact that you have had an about face, I think dovetails very nicely with what you were just saying a few moments ago, is that whether it's a huge publicly traded behemoth on Wall Street or whether it's a comparatively smaller privately held entity, businesses come and go, and you know, nothing's forever. And that's, to some people, a very sobering pill to swallow, but it's probably more accurate than not.
Well, you know, it takes a special mix. It's like being a chef. Some people can make a croissant, and most people pretend to know how to make a croissant. It's baking. It's an art. It's a real art, baking, and not cooking. Cooking is not an art in the same way. And when you're talking about a business, it is a very fine art combined with art, a little magic, a little risk. And
a little pixie dust.
A little pixie dust. And there's no guarantee that lightning will continue to strike in the bottle many times. And you're talking about Dell, and we're trying to objectify a process which we don't know what it's up for because we don't know what's going to happen in the future. But clearly, there's international competition that they've never had before. There's innovation, which we don't know. Dell, no matter what, if it's going to survive, it has to innovate.
Well, I think you hit on an important point. The very innovation that made Dell, the ability to customize a PC and basically look at it as being a menu, you know, going back to your cooking analogy.
And get their money ahead of time.
And get their money ahead of time is now so commonplace. It's like using your iPad to order something at Starbucks. I mean, like everybody does it, you know, so you're right.
What Michael Dell did was, when you look at it in hindsight, it's so brilliant in its simplicity that you say, oh my God, why didn't anybody think of that before? But in its brilliance, it was an easy thing to copy after the fact. And then you're sitting around in an industry where all of us are looking every 2 years. We're on a 2-year cycle of looking at our technology, our phones, our laptops, and we're saying, what's the best thing for me right now? And Dell right now doesn't have an offering that looks like it's
right. I mean,
what's the best thing for me right now.
You use the term innovate. Yeah. What would be the next innovation? It's certainly not. I mean, it could be something coming out of Apple. But the fact of the matter is that so far the only company that's consistently innovating is Apple, and maybe to an extent BlackBerry. But neither of those, ironically, are really in the PC space. It's all in mobile devices or tablets. So it becomes a very interesting discussion, which I thought it was, you know, going to be relevant to our listeners and everything else.
Well, that's because I think the phone is the more universal product.
Right.
And so and it gets replaced a lot more. So it's you know, it's a really interesting discussion, and I'm really glad you brought it up. It's not really a Dell discussion. You use Dell as a platform to discuss, you know, these deep-rooted business issues. And I'll just end it by saying most people in family businesses assume that like the home, that just because they're leaving the home to their children, that that home is going to be as safe and protective as it was for them, it will be for their children. And that's absolutely not the case.
Especially when you have potentially a warring family that has been kept together by either the patriarch or the matriarch, and all of a sudden, after they're gone, so many years of making sure that child A wasn't feuding with child B is now moot because, unfortunately, they're 6 feet under, and the kids are going to do what the kids are going to do, and it might be the same bricks and mortar, but it's certainly not going to be stable. You're right.
See it all the time. Yeah. Working on a few of those right now. It's sad to see. They're sad cases because people don't – they're not objective about them, and you know they're headed for a wall.
They are headed for a wall.
This is Radio Entrepreneurs. We're talking with Gregory Stoller. I don't know if we're talking about international business. It's ubiquitous. Right now we're talking about all business.
Greg, hey, it's Radio Entrepreneurs. Isn't that what it's all about?
Greg, you're over at BC. Why don't you tell people how they can reach you?
Sure. My BC email address is probably the fastest way of getting in touch with me. It's gregory.stoller1@bc.edu. That's gregory.stoller1@bc.edu.
Great having you on. It's a great story. I'm sure we'll be playing it a lot for people. We're going to take a break. We're going to be right back on Radio Entrepreneurs.